From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pittsburgh, California.
Oh, I'm not from the Bay Area.
Pinole, California.
San Jose.
I'm from Paradise, California, up north.
Coming up, we hear about the challenges of finding work with a criminal record from the perspective of the unemployed and from employers.
We would be here all day long interviewing people. And actually, 90 people last time applied. So we do have to filter it down.
Then we meet our neighbors in Marin City, that is.
I can care less what the Postal Service calls us, but we know we're from Marin City.
Better recognize. And we take a listen to the punk rock of choral music.
It's partly because anybody can do it. My friends who are into punk rock are all over it.
That's today on Cross Currents. Stay tuned. With a presidential election looming, the issue of the day is still the economy. California has the third highest unemployment rate in the nation, and that just counts people who are actively looking for work. It doesn't include those who've been looking longer than 4 weeks, or the folks who are so discouraged that they've given up altogether. Re-entering the job market is so difficult. One report shows that a worker who's been unemployed for more than 1 year has less than a 10% chance of finding a job. Now, imagine also having a criminal offense on your record. For 65 million people with an arrest or a conviction, that is the reality. The increased use of background checks in hiring make it that much more difficult for this population to find a job. But in April, new policies were issued for employers and how they should consider someone's criminal background. KALW's Kyungjin Lee reports.
By the time Cheryl Lozano was 27 years old, she already had several run-ins with the law.
All of it has been under the influence of PCP, possession of PCP. On one occasion, DUI, second time that happened, third time, and then I was sent to prison.
She got clean when she came out and held down several jobs. She was a radiology clerk, receptionist, a bookkeeper.
There weren't doing that many background checks, so it was easier for me to establish a job.
For 14 years, everything was fine, but in 2005, she relapsed and she lost her job. When she got back in the market, she didn't realize how much things had changed since she came out of prison in the late 90s. She always checked yes when asked about criminal convictions.
But I never got called back. And the one job that I did get called back, when they did a background check, they said no because I had DUI on my record.
Today, competition for jobs is as fierce as ever. As of March, there were about 3 unemployed workers for every available job in the U.S. This puts employers in a position to be picky.
It's delivered refrigerated as well.
So is this all where you keep your kombucha?
Yeah.
Anything else?
Like Mama Chia, which is, they're introducing chia seeds in a beverage.
Sil Kravacheza owns a beverage company in Livermore and is looking to hire 2 drivers. Because of the overwhelming response in the past, he now requires applicants to apply in person with their DMV records. His Craigslist ad also specifies no criminal history.
It seems to me that anybody that has a criminal history has a DMV problem. You know, to me, that's somebody that may have a criminal background. So we eliminate that immediately.
He says he's had some bad experiences with ex-offenders in the past. He once got a call from a Walmart manager about a couple of his employees.
He just wanted to let me know that 2 of my trucks have been sitting behind the store for about an hour. So I drove over there, but they thought it was a good time to get together and smoke dope. And you can imagine, as an owner of a company, I took the keys, fired them both on the spot.
Kravacheza says he's also had positive experiences with ex-offenders and would still consider someone with a criminal record. But he says he needs a way to filter applicants.
We would be here all day long interviewing people. And actually, 90 people last time applied. So we do have to filter it down.
But Maurice Anselm says this type of hiring practice might be illegal. He's an attorney with the National Employment Law Project.
They have to show that the practice is job-related, that they've looked at the age of the offense, the seriousness of the offense, and the person's record compared to the job that they're applying to.
That's according to guidelines issued by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission 25 years ago. Anselm says today, conditions have gotten much worse for people with criminal backgrounds. That's because that population is growing and background checks are more common. So the EEOC issued new guidelines. They reinforce the basic principles of its past policy, but now the guidelines provide updates on what's legal and illegal in hiring.
The employers need to take some time to look at the individual. If you have a system online that says so-and-so with a record won't qualify and they're immediately rejected on the online application, then by definition, they haven't really taken a serious look at the individual.
That's Raymond Chen's problem. Chen was a sophomore at San Jose State studying computer science when he was arrested and sentenced to 30 months in federal prison.
I went in for possession and attempt to distribute MDMA.
Otherwise known as ecstasy. Chen's been out of prison since November and has been looking for work.
I believe I already applied for this one.
Chen diligently checks Craigslist and submits one or two job applications every day, mostly for warehouse or data entry positions.
I got like a couple of calls back, but most of the time, you know, because my resume, it shows that, you know, I only worked once, which was in 2008, I believe, when I was working at UPS. And then they would ask me, you know, what I've been doing since 2008 till now. And I can't really lie about it. So I just tell them the truth and then they never call you back right afterwards.
Today, 65 million people in the U.S., that's one in four adults, have an arrest or conviction that will show up in background checks. What's worse, they are often riddled with incomplete information. In fact, Emsalem says back in 2006, a Department of Justice report found that half of the FBI's background checks are inaccurate. That means an arrest that never leads to a conviction might still pop up in one of these checks. Emsalem says this unfairly disadvantages millions of workers in finding employment, especially people of color.
African Americans are arrested at three times the rate compared to their representation in the general population. Whites are arrested at half their rate compared to their representation in the general population. So that's a significant disproportionate impact, and that's true around the state.
To give you a sense of the scope of this imbalance, in some major U.S. cities like Chicago, almost 80% of working-age African-American men have criminal records. In Oakland, there's an office supply company looking to improve the situation. It's called Give Something Back. It proactively hires people who've had trouble finding work, including ex-offenders.
If you walk around the office, you'll find a tremendous diversity in this office, and that's a residue of a design. That doesn't happen by accident. We reach out to try to make sure our workforce is representative of the community.
President Mike Hannigan says while his company provides additional training for these employees, their quality of work is no different than those without records. And he says the myth that ex-offenders are more prone to stealing or causing trouble is just that, a myth.
I mean, the fact of the matter is people misunderstand what incarcerated populations are like. I mean, they're as diverse as regular populations. Some of them are hard cases. Some of them are people who had bad experiences and did bad things once in a while. But some of them can transition into very productive, careers.
Hannigan says there are also certain benefits for employers who hire people with criminal records, such as tax credits.
And also there's lots of benefit once they do integrate because they tend to be very loyal, very productive, and appreciate the opportunity of work.
Oh, I was a go-getter, I believe, even from an early age. I wanted to be a DEA agent. I know that sounds crazy, but it's the truth.
Cheryl Lozano didn't get that DEA job, but she did find a position in sales. She's grateful her employer didn't use a background check when evaluating her. Some companies are coming around reluctantly. Earlier this year, the EEOC successfully sued Pepsi because its hiring policy excluded anyone with an arrest record, which disproportionately affected African-American applicants. The beverage company has since changed its hiring practices. Advocates hope these high-profile cases will encourage smaller employers to change their practices voluntarily. As for job seekers with criminal records, the two words of advice heard over and over again are, don't lie, no matter how tempting. For Cross Currents, I'm Kyungjin Lee.
Would you hire someone with a criminal record? And does it matter which crime they committed? Tell us what you think. Leave us a message on our feedback line. It's 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. When you think of high crime areas, Marin County probably doesn't come to mind. It's more known for its affluence, its expensive luxury homes, and, well, George Lucas, maybe. But Marin City is another story. It's made of just 10 interconnected blocks, bordered on two sides by Sausalito and the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. Two streets, Drake and Donahue, form the backbone, and high-density Section 8 buildings tower over the city. Compared to Marin County, Marin City has more unemployment, poverty, and single-parent homes. And the closest thing to a food shop is the single CVS fridge aisle that stocks drinks and frozen dinners. But don't think it's a dead-end city. KALW's Irene Flores brings us a story from Drake Street, where a group of young men and community leaders are trying to find the city's entrepreneurial spirit.
Lorenzo Bynum has the athletic build you might see on the cover of GQ without the swagger. It's a Wednesday afternoon in Marin City, and the 23-year-old is digging frantically through a 10x10 closet. He's hunting for a parachute large enough for a game with 15 third graders. Wednesdays are busy days for Bynum. He clocks in at three part-time jobs, 2 hours directing elementary school children, 2 hours coaching track and field, and 2 hours coaching middle school boys basketball. One reason Bynum likes basketball is that he grew up shooting hoops around town with the friends and family members who are now his business partners. In late 2011, Bynum, his cousin Lewis, and his friends Marcus Mason, Maurice Jenkins, and Melvin Judson launched a business designing and selling t-shirts. With $365 pooled from their savings, they ordered 100 cardigans and 50 sweatshirts and began screen printing original designs. So far, they've sold over 200 shirts.
If you don't know us and you just see us out in the street, you'll just think we're some bad guys from Marin City. But when you really get to know us and understand us, you're like, oh, they're just normal guys just like us trying to make it in this environment, in this world. I don't know. Most people don't see that. So, like, we're here to try to get that out in the streets.
Like many other people living in Marin City, the young men have had a hard time finding work. Over the last 30 years, Marin City residents battled poverty and drug abuse. Today, some things are better. According to the 2010 census, Marin City is now a median income community. But the stigma and the challenges remain. Marin City still has higher crime and poverty rates than the prosperous county surrounding it. And more than a quarter of Marin City residents continue to live under the poverty line. Bynum and his crew see themselves as part of Marin City's renewal.
Our clothing line is called Red Eye, and it's basically like, you know, a plane, but it's real expressions through one's eyes. That's what Red Eye is like an acronym for. And the flight to success is basically sticking to the theme of a plane and being successful in anything you do and everything that you do. Flight to success. It's catchy. It sounds good. It goes good off the tongue.
So I'm not too much worried about it, though. I have the business to fall back on, and then I know just me being me, it wouldn't be too hard to find another job.
Now the crew works out of two homes. Both are in public housing. At the four-bedroom apartment Maurice Jenkins shares with his parents and siblings, they receive equipment and clothing. They hold meetings at the two-bedroom apartment Lorenzo shares with his family. But soon, they will be working out of their own office, thanks to a local nonprofit. Along with joblessness, youth crime continues to plague Marin City. Kevin Lynch is the director of Marin County Youth Probation Services. He says that over the last few years, crime has dropped throughout the county. But most of what does happen is in Marin City.
Approximately 75% youth of color, which is, you know, way out of proportion to what youth of color represent in Marin County. Actually, the majority of the youth of color are Latino youth, and that frustrates me. That I think we should be able to do better. And when I see numbers going down for other youth, but not this population, it frustrates me even more. It makes me wonder and think, what can we be doing differently?
Walking around Marin City, it's easy to see the things that make life harder. Outside Jenkins' apartment, an older, frail woman is walking around in circles. She's stoned. Within 45 seconds, a police car approaches and officers step out to talk with her. Behind her, young men are joking and listening to music. They don't seem to notice. And yet, everywhere I walk in Marin City, people greet each other. And everyone has heard of Red Eye and their message of rising above. 26-year-old John Allen is hanging out with his friends outside a local nonprofit building.
I'm involved in a lot of stuff. I know a lot of people that got a lot of stuff going on. And the fashion is definitely one of the things. You know, we got the flight gang out here. You know, we got a lot of stuff going on out here who just push strictly clothes, though. It's not a gang. They push clothes.
What does that mean, flight?
Flight is like an airplane. Like, we taking off. We fly. We in the air. We looking down on the haters.
Both John Allen and 17-year-old Derek Morgan say living in Marin City is challenging.
Marin is what you make it. It can be your heaven or it can be your hellhole.
It's kind of hard growing up here because, you know, we don't always have everything. And people might see things they want, you know, but it takes yourself to rise above, like, you know, the influences and stuff. So that it takes yourself to want to do something different. So that's basically what it is. And growing up here, you can either get caught up in it or you could, you know, break away from it, like.
Lorenzo Bynum says a positive role model helped him rise. His grandfather was a builder and an entrepreneur, and now Bynum wants to be that inspiration for others.
What I'm doing is not unusual. Just to this community is unusual, you know? No, everybody sees the word Marin City and they think negative.
The Red Eye team is in the process of coming out with a new collection. This one will have 120 shirts and tank tops for sale. Until the collection comes out, they will be submitting grant applications as they prepare to buy a digital t-shirt printer, and they'll be keeping the business going. In Marin City, I'm Irene Flores for Cross Currents.
We'd like to know more about your neighborhood. Share it with us on our Facebook page. We are KALW News. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. And now for some artery, cultural coverage that's revivalist. Sacred harp singing dates back to the 1700s. It's a participatory tradition, which means that singers perform for themselves and not for an audience. Some even characterize it as the punk rock of choral music. An increasing number of music lovers has been rediscovering this singing style all over the country and even abroad. In Berkeley, a sacred harp group formed 8 years ago and is slowly attracting more and more members. Reporter Shani Aviram went to find out what's drawing people to revive this 200-year-old tradition.
This is not a rehearsal. It's not a performance either, but these singers are belting out the tunes. The Bay Area Sacred Harp Group usually meets in Berkeley, but today there are about 60 people crammed in a small wooden room at the Potrero Hill neighborhood house in San Francisco. They're sitting around a hollow square where each side represents a voice in a four-part harmony. Bass, tenor, alto, and treble.
And we'll all sing hallelujah when we arrive at home.
What is Sacred Harp?
That's Hannah Blair, an artist from San Francisco.
I have been working on a short explanation of this, actually, ever since I got this tattoo.
She points to the notes of a hymn called Africa, tattooed on her left arm. It's written in shape notes, rectangles, diamonds, and triangles.
And realized the very next day that I was going to spend the rest of my life explaining Sacred Harp to people.
Sacred Harp is one of the oldest forms of American folk music. It was developed in the churches of New England 200 years ago. The brash singing style quickly died out as music scholars of the day dismissed it as too crude for church. The tradition eventually took root in the rural South, where it is still sung to this day. Since the 1980s, Sacred Harp has experienced what some call an urban revival in cities all over the country. But even as the music catches on with a new generation of singers, Blair still finds it hard to explain its appeal without adding a few disclaimers.
You know, I'm not religious, and it's, you know, San Francisco. We sing in church, you know, but like it's just in a church. It's not like at church, but I do feel sometimes like it's a bit of a guilty pleasure in San Francisco.
It's a guilty pleasure because the words are steeped in evangelical Christian theology.
Well, the words are a stumbling block for a lot of people when they start singing the music.
That's Dan Harper. He's a minister at the Unitarian Church in Palo Alto. He says even if you have a problem with the religious lyrics of Sacred Harp, that doesn't have to stop you from singing it.
So there's a lot of people who sing all kinds of music and they have no interest in the words at all, but they just like the music. So you think about a lot of the American standards right out of the American songbook, and the words are totally meaningless. I mean, Moonlight Over Vermont, who the hell cares about Moonlight Over Vermont? But we sing it because it's a wonderful song. So I think a lot of people approach Sacred Harp music that way, is you don't worry too much about the words.
And the singing itself can be a hard sell. Sacred Harp is loud. The harmonies are unusual and not quite in tune. But music lovers of all walks of life are finding ways to relate to the 200-year-old tradition. Blair says the first time she attended the weekly singing in Berkeley, it took her back to her past when she was in a metal band.
We were a really noisy band. I did a lot of screaming, and there was something as different as being in the band was from Sacred Harp. There was something equally physical about Sacred Harp, you know, singing as loud as I could and running out of air in a lot of the songs. And then just the experience of making music with a bunch of people who were also really excited to be there. And it was a really intense experience to have with a bunch of strangers.
It's an intense experience for Harper, too, but for a different reason.
It's partly because anybody can do it. My friends who are into punk rock are all over it, because then I just tell them it's all about do-it-yourself music, and that gets a lot of people, too.
Like in punk rock, you don't have to be classically trained or be exactly on pitch to sing Sacred Harp songs. They're written in shape notes, a notation system that was designed to be easier to sight read so that anyone can pick it up and sing.
So we have four notes there. You have the triangle is fa.
Cassie Allen is a singer from Rome, Texas.
And you can say it fa or fa, either way. People sing it both ways. They kind of do a fa.
She's conducting a singing school for an enthusiastic Bay Area crowd.
Fa. That's how the old people.
Singing schools are part of the inclusive tradition of Sacred Harp and shape note singing. Their purpose was to teach congregations to sight sing so every member could take part in the service.
Part of Sacred Harp singing is blending. We don't care how loud you sing, really. We don't care if you sing off tune. But most of the time when you break up in parts like that, you tend to try to blend together.
Sacred Harp is sung in four-part dispersed harmony. That means every vocal line can exist independently from one another, but when sung together, they create a unique texture of voices. As Alan explains, Sacred Harp is ultimately a communal experience. That's why it's about blending all these different voices together. She says it's not about how you sing. And Hannah Blair says it's also not about what you believe.
Part of the tradition is that it doesn't matter what your politics are, what your beliefs are, who you are, what you're doing. It's rare that you find a group that all you have to do is want to be a member. And you are.
Maybe that's why the Sacred Harp tradition travels so well outside of its southern home. It welcomes anyone who wants to do it. Blair says that she will always be a part of a larger community, no matter where a singing takes place. The rough sound and the religious tone might take newcomers some getting used to, but the experience of singing loudly in four-part harmony with a bunch of people is hard to resist. For Cross Currents, I'm Shani Aviram.
You can hear the Sacred Harp singers perform around the Bay Area, like every Monday at UC Berkeley. More days and locations are online at kalw.org.
That's it for today's edition of Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Brian Flagg, Emily Gaddick, Nina Gensler-Debs, RTM's Konohovs, Erica Mu, Taja Lanier, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, Isaac Silk, and Mariel Wallof. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. The song you're hearing now is being performed by the Fret Not Old Time Gospel Band. They play Americana gospel, which they describe as farmer formal, sacred songs from the Civil War era to the Depression. They play frequently at funerals, gospel missions, benefit concerts, and prisons. Next Sunday, they'll be performing at the Dual Vocational State Prison in Tracy, starting at 5 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.